It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game right here at VSiN, where sports betting analytics live, actionable sports betting information. It's Gil Alexander. Thanks for joining us once again. Thanks for hanging out. Still to come, Ron Flatter, a rare Monday Ron Flatter appearance. He's going to talk about a couple horse racing props up at Billy Hill, including this one about will a horse that wins the Belmont also win the Derby? Remember, the Belmont happens first this year. End of June, this month, we can now say this month for golf, for the Triple Crown, starting to see some sports come back. First, though, I wanted to bring this gentleman in. This story broke on Thursday, but we were too close to we already had Friday booked, so I couldn't squeeze him in on Friday. But I wanted to have him in to talk about several things. But really, the headline of which is the disaster that is sports betting in the District of Columbia, a template perhaps for how not to do this correctly. What I would say is probably the finest authority on these new legalization in sports betting in this country. He may disagree with me because he's humble. It's Captain Jack Andrews back on the show. How you doing, Jack?
Hey, Gil. Good to be here with you.
Thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate it. You were quick to point out, let's start with something good. You were quick to point out that it's not all bad. There could be a silver lining. But let's start with, let's run out just the opening on Thursday, just how bad it was initially.
Yeah, so, you know, they went live with their product, which they named DC Gambit. I put out a tweet. It appears they're using the word gambit, which I looked up the origin of gambit, and it's an Italian word from, I believe the word is gambetto, and it literally means tripping up. So that's DC for you, right? That's off to a great start.
There's your tweet right there. Yeah, that's already they're calling their shot, in other words. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, so, you know, originally everyone looked at it and they saw right away, they have lines up for the first week of the NFL for the fall, but it's -118 on either side, which is, you know, that's just a non-starter for gamblers everywhere. That's kind of ridiculous, right? It kind of got worse from there. I don't know how deep you want to get into it, but I decided I'd look up the NASCAR race that night. And I looked at the lines and I thought, wow, these really seem kind of short. So I quickly did the computation on what the hold percentage was. And the hold percentage on the NASCAR race was 75%, which is, you know, that's just ridiculous. I mean, looking back now, it appears that was an error on their part. They tripped up and that was intended to be their top three finish lines. In other words, those drivers to finish in the top three of the race. And then they put up revised outright lines for the race, and it still came out with a pretty high hold percentage, about 33%. That's not egregious. It's not great, but it's not as bad as 75%.
Yeah, you also had another tweet. The last one we have here is that, you know, you did say the real winners are everybody else who's going to open up shop there, I guess.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Their biggest competition is going to be, there's going to be a huge sports book at the Capital One Center there in downtown D.C. William Hill is going to run that. Ted Leonsis is, you know, part of that venture. And it's going to be, you know, from what I've heard, it's going to be the largest sports book anywhere, over, I think, 20,000 square feet of space inside the sports book. You'll be able to watch games there that are going on in that arena, as well as days when the arena is dark. So it should be a neat experience, but there's no mobile there. In other words, DC Lottery has the exclusive rights to all the mobile betting in DC. So the arena just gets, you know, foot traffic through the arena. But the other interesting thing with DC betting is bars and taverns around town can get a sports betting license and can have a, sports betting operation. Again, not mobile, just within the bar or tavern itself. And that could lead to some interesting things. That could lead to some small market players coming in and running small market operations there in these bars and taverns. Now, of course, when you have such a small operation, I don't know how well it's going to be in terms of people that want to actually bet a significant amount of money. They might be all kind of low-limit shops. But if you like to bar hop in D.C., this might be a lot of fun for you.
Gil Alexander, Captain Jack Andrews, right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM Channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus. Any idea what the license fee would be on having your own mom and pop shop there in D.C., your own bar with sports betting?
I don't know it off the top of my head. It was, though, it wasn't too bad. It's low enough that I'm going to say it's like in the $100,000 range. It's not as bad as some other states. It's probably cheaper than a liquor license, obviously, in D.C. And it'll be enough that people should see value, bar owners should see value in going this route. And from what I've seen, a lot of startup companies that are in the sports betting space that have had trouble getting into other jurisdictions are targeting D.C. as definitely a quick and easy play for them to get into the market.
Jack, I think there's people listening to this show right now who are sitting in their underwear right now who are thinking that for themselves. They're like, hey, wait a minute. You mean I can do my own sports book? I mean, there's a couple things that run through my head, and I probably should have asked Steve Zabin in the previous hour what he thinks about this as well as a guy who plies his trade in sports talk radio there in D.C. But, you know, as someone who grew up in that region of the country and specifically in the confines of the District of Columbia, and this is going to be no newsflash to anybody who grew up there, the D.C. government kind of jacks up a whole bunch of stuff and has for my entire lifetime. And when, you know, when the prospect of D.C. betting ever came up, I said to myself, as many probably said to themselves, there's not a chance in hell they get this right. Like, there's just no way this is going to work out. And Gambet being perhaps the poster child of that. And I guess the question for you with all of these, D.C. and beyond, when you see egregious lines and an egregious culture for sports bettors. Montana, I guess, is the other state that sort of leaps to mind. Maybe D.C. is better than Montana. Can we not make D.C. last place right now? But the question is, do you think it will matter, Jack? So in other words, as much you do so much great work of trying to be an advocate for bettors, and you're like, hey, as you know, as loud as you can scream, this is not good, people. But in the end, do you think that will matter, or is it like I always talk about on the show with Craig? Is it just going to be, you know what, Jack? I'm sure you know what you're talking about, but I'm just a casual bettor, and I'm just here for entertainment, and I'm just happy to bet. See ya.
There's going to be a lot of people like that, Gil, unfortunately. And, you know, we've seen that, though. When it's the only game in town, they can make up whatever rules they want, and the public will still eat it up. The problem is, the American sports bettor is different than other sports bettors around the world. So what has worked in European cultures or Australian or, you know, Asian cultures in terms of sports betting, where it's just not that competitive of a product, that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to work in the U.S. You know, the U.S. sports bettor, the U.S. gambler, in fact, is much different. They, for instance, what is the most popular game in a casino table game? It's blackjack. And why do people play blackjack? Because they've heard you can win. They've heard you can beat that. Whether they're able to beat it, whether they're able to count cards or whatever they need to do, that's another subject, right? You know, very few people are able to do it. Well, the same thing lies true with sports betting, is people want to do sports betting because they heard they can win. They heard they can beat it. And if you take that away from them by offering a product that is just wholly uncompetitive and you know, can't be beaten in your wildest dreams, well, then you basically take their dream away and you take away the fun that it is in playing it. You know, sports betting is not a lottery, right? You know, people say, oh, well, what about the lottery? It's a high edge and people drive to that. Well, they do, but sports betting is not a lottery product. Sports betting is a product where you say, I know something about this. I can beat this because I know something about sports. And that's what drives people to play sports betting.
DC worse than Montana, or does Montana still take the cake, would you say?
Well, they're going to be very similar because they all have the same back end. Intralot is this company that runs the DC lottery product and also runs the Montana product. Montana has a very unique situation where they've decided they will give 6% of the handle, in other words, of the gross wagering handle, to bars and taverns that have their product in their bar and tavern. And so that's a huge commission to overcome. I mean, I don't even know how you could overcome it. 6% off the top before, you know, wins and losses are factored in. So that's going to really hamstring Montana for a long time until they change that law. So DC's got a shot once there's competitive companies in there, in the bars and taverns and the arenas and stadiums. That should bring the Intralot DC lottery product back down to earth a little bit, I would think.
You know, on the you know more bullish side of things, and maybe this isn't bullish, but just in terms of a big sort of domino to fall, California looms. And California has always been the state for me. You know, we talk about because we happen to broadcast usually non-pandemic time of year, that is, obviously, from Vegas. And we always talk about the impact of things on Vegas and how Vegas is pretty much Teflon. But I've always contended that if they legalize sports betting in California, more widespread, that's going to have an effect because there is a regional influx from California when it comes to sports betting in Las Vegas. There's a new bill that's being proposed. How excited should Californians be about this?
How excited? Well, let's say don't hold your breath. So there is a new bill, and basically it's a bill in both the Assembly, House Assembly there, and the Senate. It's kind of a joint bill. And basically it allows for the tribal casinos and the horse racing tracks to offer sports wagering. And also the tribal casinos can now offer craps and roulette, which they hadn't had those two games before. And the California card rooms would not be allowed to offer sports wagering. However, it also prevents the tribes from suing the card rooms for this player-banked table games that they've had for almost decades now. The tribes have always thought that was something that was affront to their tribal compact. So here's the thing with California, though. Even if this law passes, it's actually a constitutional amendment, which means it needs to go before the voters. So if the law needs to pass by a two-thirds majority in the Senate and the Assembly, and then go to the voters and then pass as a proposition on the ballot, hopefully by this November. But the problem is the tribes don't want this deal. For whatever reason, right. The tribes do not want this deal. And as a result, I don't know if this is going to go through. There's enough lobbying effort by the tribes to prevent the Assembly and House from passing with a two-thirds majority. And the reason the tribes don't want this is because they still want to be able to sue those card rooms for that other table game issue. And all of this is affecting sports betting in California. And so that's why I don't think Nevada has that much to worry about just yet.
Also, the tribe lobby is why we should never think that it's going to happen in Florida either, right? For better or worse,
right.
However you stand on it.
Exactly. It's another situation in Florida where the Seminole tribe has such a powerful lobby in Florida politics that they're only going to want sports betting the way they want it. It's not going to be a kind of a competitive environment there in Florida for the racinos and the dog tracks and horse tracks that exist in Florida to get a piece of the pie. And, you know, one more point about California is the tribes don't want mobile betting. The tribes believe that sports betting should just bring traffic into their casinos. So, you know, look, Gil, you know, you spend plenty of time in California. Do you really want to be driving out to Thunder Valley, I guess, might be the closest casino to you there?
No disrespect to them, but no, that's a big fat no. Yeah.
Right. So if without mobile gaming, California sports betting would just be a poor product.
Well, that wasn't an exciting answer, but that's an honest answer. Talking to Captain Jack Andrews, by the way, you can follow him on Twitter at CapJack2000. And listen, I'll just interject here before I ask about Colorado. Your web series on YouTube is spectacular. And it's evergreen. And I think this is obviously what you were going for, that long after this pandemic is gone, and you've already admitted, you know, hey, you may not have the time to put out as much content once sports returns, but these will sit there in perpetuity, man. And people can go back to these because they're so educational. They're so interesting. They're so high level. So again, just another, you know, time to commend you on it. What was the last episode you did on this? What's the latest?
Wow, they all blend together. The one I did this past Friday was on how sharps win. I went through the entire spectrum of what sharp bettors do. You know, some people think all sharp bettors are just originators. You know, we're just all kind of handicapping everything in the world and have our crystal ball. But some sharp bettors are actually guys that are middling, or guys that are just rounding up accounts for other people to use, or guys that are moving money or moving lines, faking line moves for sports books. It's a fascinating ecosystem that exists here just within sharp bettors. And I kind of peeled back the curtain a little bit and showed people, you know, how that all works. So, yeah, that was the last webcast. And then just this morning, actually, I put up three new videos that are shorter. They're about 3 minutes long, about some basic tasks that sports bettors need to do, like converting odds to probability and things like that. So if you're interested in kind of learning more about sports betting, hopefully those videos are a good place to start.
Those videos alone, I haven't seen those. You're just telling me about them for the first time. I wasn't aware. But anything, like there's books, like I used to say to Elihu Feustel about his book, which I have on my bookshelf, and any better for salt should probably have in on his bookshelf. It was worth it for the charts alone in those days, right? Because we didn't have access to as much of that, like on the internet back in the day. But the fact that you would put those out in video is such a great idea. So good for you on that, man. I hope people drive and you get a lot of traffic there. Let's conclude with this. You are on top of all of this. I'm going to guess that Colorado is sort of now, along with New Jersey, sort of gold standard-ish when it comes to how to do this correctly. And I would just ask you broadly, what excites you? Like, what is it that would move your needle? Is it what they're doing in Colorado? Or do you have ideas where you're like, you know, if they did this, I think, would put certain jurisdictions over the top?
Yeah, you know, Gil, here's the thing with sports betting is we've been doing it the same way for decades now, right? You know, it's we bet sides, we bet totals, but there's so much to it more than that, you know. The sports betting market could be so much richer and more abundant. And the companies that are kind of bringing about those innovations and ideas are the small startups. And unfortunately, so far with these states is they haven't really allowed small startups to get into the game and to push innovative products. I'd like to see states that have a lower barrier to entry that aren't making it so it's just the big guys, you know. And when I say big guys, I'm talking bigger than Vegas casinos can afford. We're talking so big that it takes these multinational corporations to come in. And, you know, anyone knows that as a consumer, you know, when you have a multinational corporation versus a mom and pop startup, you're going to feel more comfortable in a mom and pop startup. You know, there's a little bit more familiar feel to it. And I think we need to get that in some other states. So Colorado is going to be a great microcosm. It's going to be a great study for the future because we're going to be able to see, we had the European companies come in, we had the American Vegas companies come in, which one was able to be successful in Colorado. We're still probably a few months away from it kind of really spinning up. Some of the players came in May, some of the operators came in May, but a lot of them are waiting until like July, August when we get more sports back to come in. And we're going to see what it's like to have everyone competing in one fair level playing field. Should be pretty interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I still think there's a lot of people, you remember when Iowa opened up and the licensing fee was so low, obviously there was more rules to it than I think was initially reported, but there's a lot of people who are, you know, are like, I can open one of these myself. And they're probably biting off more than they can chew in most cases, if not all cases. But I do think that that's, there's some medium there in the middle, right? Where it's not extreme, where nobody of any funding, you know, can't get into it at this point. Your point about sports, though, and how I try to make this point as often as possible. Obviously, people are going to be bored if I say it too much. But I think we'll look back at sports betting as we've known it in the standard model, as we've just talked about, people betting primarily straight up against the spread pre-flop and totals and futures and season win totals. I think we'll look back on this. And I don't know if it's 5 years from now, Jack. I don't know if it's 10 years. Maybe it's 20. But I think about conversations I used to have with Andrew Giroud about 10 years ago. Andrew Giroud was the lead developer for the Midas algorithm, which was CG's in-game betting. And he's super a derivatives trader in the UK. And he used to tell me in his lovely British accent, you know, you guys will be in-game betting in no time, more than 50% of your handle. And he overestimated the speed with which the American public adopts things, but he got it right in the long term. And I just think about the old World Sports Exchange golf that they did. And I look at golf. No sport is more ripe for a revolution than golf betting, than golf when it comes to betting. The fact that you have this pool of players over a 4-day period and it can be treated like a stock market, I just wish someone would start there. because that to me is what excites me. Like, let's advance to the modern day, for goodness sake, because we are such in the dark ages, really, when you look around still, I think.
I agree, Gil. And, you know, there are other sports, too. Anytime you have a situation where it's an individual player, there's all these other options you can do. You know, with golf, look, we could do hole by hole. We could do next shot. We could do ranges. It's just there's a lot of ground left to cover. There's a lot of innovations left to uncover when it comes to sports betting.
And shout out to our buddy Ed Miller. What's he doing real quick on the way out?
Yeah, Ed Miller and Matthew David Al, their company, Deck Prism Sports, they were certified to operate now in Colorado, which means they can be a vendor to the other operators there in Colorado. And they, of course, have an in-game pricing model that they hope is going to revolutionize in-game betting. They were guests on my webcast a couple weeks ago. We did a little happy hour with them. And yeah, their product looks like it'll go live in Colorado now as well. So they're on their upward slope as well.
Good for them. I had Ed and Matt on when their book came out, The Logic of Sports Betting. I would love to have Ed or both Ed and Matt back on again to talk about that and more. Maybe part of the old betting profile series that you were kind enough to be a part of, Jack. Appreciate it, man. You're always insightful. Thank you for the time, my friend. Thanks.
Thanks, Gil.
Captain Jack Andrews at CapJack2000 on Twitter. Maybe the best follow you'll find. Seriously, in this space, and I mean that. Coming back, Danny Burke and I, we got stuff to talk about. Table tennis. Ooh, Lord. Next on a numbers game of Visa, the Esports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Gil Alexander, live in San Francisco, right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, live in San Francisco. Danny Burke in studio in Las Vegas. Danny, just some knickknacks from the weekend. Because, you know, I don't know if you know this, it's a pandemic. So there's just knickknacks, pretty much. Is that an accurate description, knickknacks?
That works.
David. Yeah, ESPN.com, great piece on table tennis and the how can I put this? As we've talked about on this network up and down, just how popular betting table tennis has been during this global pandemic, just out of control in terms of people's willingness to bet this, very quick matches. But the article pretty much, just in case you missed it, just wanted to put across how you have to bet at your own risk with this, because none of it is sort of, how can I put this? None of it is sanctioned in a way that most sports are. And if anything, this piece that David Purdom contributed to, Paula Levine and Georgi Milkov, I hope I pronounced that correct, Gambling on Table Tennis is Blowing Up, But Are the Matches Legit? Is what it's titled, as you see on the screen there at Visa.com and the Visa app. Basically, what they're saying is all of these real sanctioning bodies are like, we can't vouch for anything. Sports books, generally speaking, though, don't see any signs of anything that is not kosher. So they continue to book it in many cases. Do we have the one passage that I sent you, Danny? I don't know if I did I get that across to you, but there's a passage in the article that is sort of really damning more than anything. And it says, consider Liga Pro. It's a Russia-based organization that holds events for a variety of sports, including basketball, esports, and table tennis. Sportsbooks are offering at least 100 table tennis matches labeled as Moscow Liga Pro or Russia Liga Pro to bettors every day. But the league's website hasn't been updated in weeks. Like, literally something that was updated before the pandemic every single day. Once the pandemic started, they just decided to put out just tens, if not hundreds, of table tennis matches. All of a sudden, like, no one's vouching for anything related. And the article is well done. I'm not doing it justice, but essentially bet at your own risk. I assume you have not dabbled, Danny.
I have not. And I think we've hit on this before, and I don't think you have either. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, obviously, but table tennis is one of those things where it's like, look, I mean, I want to bet just as much as the next person, but I don't necessarily have enough confidence to want to do table tennis, because when I'm betting something, I like to watch it. I know some people can't stand to watch it, whether it's stress or they don't need to, whatever it may be, but I usually like to watch what I put my money on, and table tennis is not something I have that much interest in, so I have stayed away from it.
Yeah. And again, I'm not hating on the players. If that's your game and you think you have an edge, I'm not sure how you do have an edge, but let's say you decide that you think you do have one. Hey man, then knock yourself out. Just not for me. Especially then, you know, just that gets reinforced, because it already seems not kosher to me to begin with, but that article certainly reinforced it. We talked about plans. Last week was sort of the week where we finally on this show decided to talk about, well, this sport is planning this and this sport is these are the current plans. Let me just follow up, because MLB, there's nothing really major to report other than they're as far apart as they always have been. And quite frankly, I don't know what Major League Baseball is up to, because every day and every week that passes by now, particularly for baseball, which has a weather hard out, to use the radio term, come wintertime. Those every day and every week is just so valuable. We may not see the sport at all. Not that I was ever thinking that was a favorite in my book. I bet that prop would, you know, in faraway places, what will we see first, NBA or MLB? NBA was plus 240. I bet it. Low limits, very low limits. But I bet the NBA. As far as the NBA is concerned, I bet that a couple months ago, the latest plan from Friday is, well, they finally, Danny, decided, I think, that they're not going to have all 30 teams show up. Mm-hmm. So there's one development. But beyond that, it looks like it's going to be a 22-team plan. That's the latest. Don't hold them to this. That would include teams that are currently within 6 games of the final playoff spots in each conference. New Orleans, Phoenix, Portland, Sacramento, and San Antonio would land in Orlando. It's all going to be in Orlando under these guidelines, with the Washington Wizards joining as the only team within 6 games of the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference. So anyway, I mean, that's what that is now. Who knows? You like that plan?
Hey, any plan we can get for NBA and then you'll cash your bet, I'll be happy, so I'll take it.
Yeah. Late July, best case scenario. Meaning we still got about 60 days, everybody. 60 days. Ron Flatter to join us next on A Numbers Game at VSiN. Horse racing props right here at the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Father's Day is just around the corner. Now that it is the month of June, you probably need a gift for a hairy dad, if you know what I mean. Hairy dad. Make your dad proud this year. Get him and yourself the Manscaped Perfect Package. The Perfect Package 3.0 kit comes with the Essential Lawnmower 3.0, water-resistant, cordless body trimmer, and a ton of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. Liquid formulations, my goodness. Inside the Perfect Package, you also find the Manscaped Crop Preserver. Let me repeat that, everybody. The Manscaped Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing deodorant and moisturizer. And no, I will not read the word that was also in that sentence. The Crop Reviver, not to be confused with the Crop Preserver, the Crop Reviver Refreshing Spray and Reduced Chafing Athletic Boxer Briefs, also part of that package. Subscribe to the Perfect Package and get a new replacement blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered to your door every 3 months. For a limited time, subscribers get a free gift, the Shed Travel Bag, a $39 value. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code VSIN at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. PastTense.com and use code VSIN. It's dad bod season, everybody. Time to get smooth. Right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. It's Gil Alexander. That took half the segment. Rod Flatter's with us. Ron, any insight on that?
Yeah, I do have some insight on that. You got that, what is it, the Lawnmower 3.0? Is it a riding mower, Gil? If you know what I'm saying.
Danny Burke
used that joke 1,000 times before, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, By the way, you are high above, according to your background, which is, for those watching on VSiN.com and VSiN app,
it's fake.
But that baby's opening. Whatever's behind you, not whatever, because there's about half the strip is opening. I was talking about how Planet Hollywood's not opening, Aria, Park MGM, just to name a few right in the middle of the strip. How do you think this goes? I haven't had a chance to ask you this because we always talk about sports, but is it going to be the Ozarks or what we've reported about cruise ships can't get, you know, there's no shortage of people ready to jump right back on cruise ships when they come back online? Do you think that this is going to be similar, or do people just not want to get in an iron tube yet and fly 2 or 3 hours?
Well, here's what I think. I think the first weekend, this weekend, may be bigger than the second weekend. Because if you consider all the people in Southern California who are nearest here, Los Angeles about 250 miles away, you know, depending on where you are in L.A., San Diego about another 100 on top of that. You know, somebody will quibble with me over the mileage, but you get the idea. That's driving distance. And I imagine a lot of people are just itching to get here. And that first weekend, this weekend, they'll get a nice bump. But I'm wondering about the second weekend and what's going to happen then. And if it will be as much. And we've heard the stories that maybe the resort fees will be a little more forgiving so that that $49 room doesn't look like the $149 room on your bill, and that the parking fees might be, you know, they may look the other way on those. So things that, by the way, a lot of folks who have looked the other way on Las Vegas over recent years have said, that's a reason why I don't come anymore. That I'll be interested to see if that's made semi-permanent or for how long that lasts. But I would think the first weekend, they're going to be excited and giddy about it. But we'll see about down the line.
Yeah, young Gil Alexander skipping the first weekend, by the way, coming back for the second.
When are you coming back?
Coming back next week. I may go away one more time before, you know, sports begins in earnest in late July, if sports begins in earnest in late July.
Yeah.
But I'm coming back, yeah. I got doctors to see. I got people to see.
Don't get me started with doctors here. I saw a doctor almost a year ago, and I'm still waiting for the results of my physical exam. Think about that. It's been almost 11 months later. But sorry, don't get me started.
About the resort fees,
your brother's a doctor. Let me make an appointment with him. But anyway, sorry. Resort fees. You were saying.
You're welcome to. I've had people much smarter in this area than I am tell me that the resort fees, maybe you'll get a little ding on them, but they're never going away because they are not taxed in the same way that all the other fees are. So hotels, that's the last thing they want to get rid of.
Ah, okay. Well, that's interesting. I mean, maybe somebody who writes the tax law, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, Carson City or Washington, may want to think twice about how that works. But that's just me talking.
That's just you talking. So no Will Rogers and no Foner now on Mondays and Tuesdays? That's gone?
Yeah, their seasons came to an end here in the last week or so, actually. In fact, I think they both wrapped up on Tuesday and Wednesday of last week. So here's the list of tracks now that we have at this moment that are going to be open for today, racing today. Tampa Bay Downs, which extended, was supposed to close Memorial Day weekend, but they got an extension to run on Mondays and Wednesdays the rest of this month. So that's available now. You've got Lone Star Park, which runs in the Dallas Metroplex, not terribly far from DFW Airport, actually. That's available for you now. Also, Mountaineer Park, which has night racing in West Virginia, and Laurel Park reopened. Remember, Laurel Park in Maryland closed abruptly in much the same way that Santa Anita and Golden Gate Fields did, coincidentally co-owned by the Stronach Group. They all kind of closed in, you know, bang, bang, bang fashion when their local municipalities ordered them closed. And so the two California tracks reopened this past month, and Laurel reopened this past weekend. And so they are open for racing today. And then you have the one, Gil, and I want you to say it with me, Assiniboia Downs in Winnipeg.
What?
Assiniboia Downs. They have a summer meet. in Winnipeg, and that they've had that for summers ad nauseum for years and years and years. So that track is open as well and available for betting in North America. So other than Tampa Bay and as well Lone Star Park, these are night meets. Lone Star's kind of a twi-night, but Tampa Bay Downs will be during the day. And so all these other tracks are opening up. And then you can add Fort Erie tomorrow north of the border. That will also be a track that's open tomorrow. Laurel Park and Tampa Bay will not be open tomorrow, but all these other tracks that I've just mentioned will be.
And horse racing stepping up, and really hasn't been any pandemic-related problems in all of these, has there been?
Yeah, I mean, here and there, you've had the occasional report that we have heard of a jockey or someone on the stable area testing positive. We heard the ones at Belmont Park. We heard Javier Castellano, the jockey down in Florida, that he had, but nothing that really spread. No bump.
Okay. Vegas, the reopening of Vegas is certainly going to be a barometer for how this is going to go moving forward. Because I could see both scenarios. If it goes well, we may never hear about this pandemic again. If it doesn't, oh boy. We'll come back. This prop at William Hill. Will the horse that wins the Belmont win the Derby? Coming back with Flatter. Numbers game. Peace.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Don't forget, now's the time to become a VSiN Plus subscriber. It is free. You won't have to decide what you want to do, pay or cancel, until at least one of the major sports returns, whenever that might be. Just go to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up. That's VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up. It's Gil Alexander. That does not include horse racing, of course. Not considered a major sport, newsflash, because horse racing is just doing its thing. And we bring in Ron Flatter once again, at Ron Flatter on Twitter, the glue that holds all this operation together, and a man who pronounces the H's in the words what, why, and when. Triple crown. You notice you do that? That's how we know you're old school. You pronounce all those H's.
I don't say why, what, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. You don't, or you could do like what's his name? What was the guy's name? Matthew Broderick, not him. John Cryer. I confused them. John Cryer on 2 and a Half Men, he would say Hawaii. So he did it in the wrong order. Or maybe. You know.
All right. So here's the thing. John Cryer reference, everybody, for those who know what the heck he's talking about. So the Triple Crown this year, obviously in different order. The Belmont Stakes, which is always last, is first. Going to be about a week or so later than it normally is in the month of June. It will be June 20th, actually a couple weeks later than it normally is in the month of June. June 20th, the Belmont Stakes. And then we take a break, pretty significant break after that. July and August go by until we get the Derby, the Kentucky Derby, which is scheduled for September 5th. The Preakness there in Maryland is on October the 3rd. So that's the order of the Triple Crown. William Hill has put out a prop about this. The odds of the horse winning the Belmont, then winning the Derby. Remember, that will be numbers 1 and 2 in the Triple Crown races in terms of chronological order. First of all, we've touched on this before, but give me an idea how you would bet this, what the different things you'd be looking at with this different order. How do you see this?
Well, my first blush impression was the question asked that you posed, will the Belmont winner be the Kentucky Derby winner? The yes, 9-2 odds. You can lay 1-6 that you'll have two different horses win those two different races. In a normal year, if you looked at the Kentucky Derby winner and then went into the Preakness Stakes, which is normally second, 2 weeks later, 9 times out of 10, maybe 49 times out of 50, the Kentucky Derby winner is not only the favorite for the Preakness Stakes, but is often odds on, more often odds on than not. So 9-2 would be a great price to get on the winner of the first leg of the Triple Crown going into the second leg. But you describe the obvious difference this year, and that is the distance between the two races. There's conjecture, and it's, I mean, open conjecture on the part of trainers who have contenders for the Belmont Stakes in 2.5 weeks, that they'll try to squeeze in another race between the Belmont and the Kentucky Derby because of the huge gap in between, which was commonly done back in the day when horses used to race all the time. You'd see horses in that 3-week gap between the Preakness and the Belmont get in another race going up until maybe the mid-60s. Breeding has changed, et cetera, and so that just doesn't happen anymore. But normally, I would say, you're giving me 9-2 on the Derby winner for the Preakness. Give me every bit of that. But as I was comparing notes with some good horse players far better than I, who actually, you know, they actually cash a ticket or two. Scott Shapiro from one of the good guys at Twin Spires, who is a horse player and does public handicapping, he said that that's not a good price because of this gap, but you probably, depending on who wins the Belmont Stakes, he thinks that you're more likely to get a price in a right around the neighborhood of 9-2 for that horse in the Kentucky Derby. That's if they get to the gate. Look, we just saw an example this past week with Nadal, the Derby favorite, now retired. We saw the case last year, Derby week, of Omaha Beach being scratched from the race because of a malady. So is not the question you have to ask yourself, is 9-2 worth it to take right now on the horse that wins the Kentucky Derby for, or pardon me, the Belmont Stakes for the Kentucky Derby? If it's a horse like, let's say, Tis the Law, won the Florida Derby, you're looking right now at global odds of 7-4, European odds of 2-1 for him to win the Belmont Stakes. If he wins the Belmont, I'll bet you're looking at a short-priced horse for the Kentucky Derby at 3-1, maybe shorter. So at 9-2 would be worth it, maybe, again, assuming he gets to the gate. Or do you say to yourself, look, I'll take my chances, wait, and see how we go. And if you get a fluky horse that just pulls one out of his hat to win the Belmont Stakes, then is that horse worth it at 9-2 in the Kentucky Derby? Maybe no. So that's the question you have to ask yourself, where in a normal year, you would take every bit of 9-2 right now on the Derby winner for the Preakness.
Good choice of the word hat there. I thought you were going in another direction there, Ron, during that sentence.
I know. I know.
No, I mean, what you raised, though, is a very interesting sports betting point. And this applies to if hockey returns in whatever form, if basketball returns in whatever form. Let's throw baseball to the side for now, because it's probably not worth getting into baseball the way it is right
now.
Strike
talks. Yeah, strike talks.
But, you know, how we bet these things normally is just going to go out the window. Again, we talked about no crowds earlier, particularly important in basketball. There's going to be more upsets in basketball than there normally are. Hockey is always, home ice never meant anything anyway, really, in the postseason. But basketball is a great example of something you're just going to have to bet it in with different approach this year, because it's just the old rules don't apply. And the Triple Crown, you know, the prop we had above that from William Hill, about a horse winning a Triple Crown, which is a prop that exists every year before the Triple Crown. And as you point out, well, let me say, for people who have listened to my podcast for years, the Beating the Book podcast, and who have listened to A Numbers Game, but particularly in the Beating the Book podcast early years, I would always, because remember, there was a 37-year gap between Affirmed winning the Triple Crown in 1978, spectacular bid, just missing in 79, but Affirmed in 1978, and what eventually was American Pharoah in 2005. But in all those years leading up to 2015, excuse me, all those years leading up to American Pharoah, I would say I would actually bet a horse yes to win the Triple Crown. And the reasoning behind that was that, as human beings, for whatever reason, our brains are wired in a certain way where if it hasn't happened, we think it's therefore likely to continue not happening. But the point I kept making was that within those 37 years, from 78 to 2015, there were so many close calls that we either processed because they won the Derby and the Preakness and got close in the Belmont, or didn't process because they won two other, you know, not the first two, but two others and got close in the third or whatever, or got scratched or disqualified, whatever. So I guess that's a long-winded way of saying, does this format now make this a, just like we were talking about basketball and hockey, do you now, like any prop that you normally would have bet, do you just say, I don't know if this makes this more likely, less likely? Maybe it has no difference whatsoever, but does it make you more inclined, less inclined, or no difference in playing a prop like that?
I think there's a difference. It makes me more inclined, although if you look at the price right now at William Hill of 13-2 or plus 650, normally you're in the range of 8-1 for that, yes. And the reason it's shortened is because of the gap between all the races. We've talked every year about how doing it in 5 weeks is very difficult. Now you're actually asking a horse to do it in three times the length of time. But I had Anthony Stabile from the New York Racing Association and a very sharp horse player on the podcast this past week. And he pointed out that trying to keep a horse happy for three times as long could be as much a challenge as trying to keep him from wearing himself out in 5 weeks. Plus the fact you've got a Belmont Stakes where you're asking horses to go 5/8 of a mile before they even make a turn, which is something that they're not used to doing. Horses are used to kind of changing leads, which is which leg do they favor when they're running, when they get to a turn. Now you're looking at 5/8 of a mile before they get to a turn for the one turn in the Belmont. So it's a very different race from what the Derby is traditionally, from what the Preakness is traditionally. We don't know. But here's one other factor to throw into the gumbo here. Gil, unlike other sports, horse racing is dependent a lot on public betting at the track, which has been removed. That public is a public that doesn't necessarily buy into advanced deposit wagering or look for ways to bet away from the track. Not as serious a bettor. So therefore, the amount of sharp money that is in the handle for horse racing right now is much more influential than it would be if you had crowds at the track. So it's going to be interesting to see how that looks against this, the backdrop of this prop. While the people who will play this prop are probably pretty much the same, they're going to be influenced a little bit more by the public money that comes in on horses to races, maybe the prep races between now and the Kentucky Derby, et cetera. Even between that, even the prep races that have happened already leading up to the Belmont Stakes, which did not have public money influencing it. So I think that is, that gets more complicated, but I think it's no less important an issue.
Jeez. Just when we thought it couldn't get any nuttier than what happened in the Derby last year, right?
Yeah.
With the results changing after a wait. I can't remember how you came down on that. Were you okay with that switch?
I was okay with the foul being called. I thought the punishment was too much for the crime. So that's there right. is within the adjudication. You didn't have to take the horse down and promote a horse that had nothing to do with that fight. That was the problem I had with it. You could have suspended the jockey for 2 months, do whatever you do. But in that, I think they were a little harsh on the people who were betting maximum security in that case. But I look, I totally respect those who came down on the side with the stewards.
Just when you thought it couldn't get any wackier, 2020 hits. And, you know, we're so used to before the Derby, I would have Felico on. He'd be like, I don't know who's going to win the Derby, but I can tell you who wins the Belmont. And he was usually right about that kind of thing. And just, we won't get that this year either. It's sort of like the Belmont, and then we forget about it, and then we resume the Triple Crown 2+ months later. Ron, thank you as always, my friend. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And, you know, do-do-do.
Ron Flatter, ladies and gentlemen, voicing the Skype ringtone for your pleasure. Thank you to Steve Zabin. Thank you to Danny Burke. Thank you to Captain Jack. Thank you to everybody behind the glass. Thank you to you. Good luck with all your betting today from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.